from
Isn't it about time for a change? We are national leaders.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As always, I ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in. Then, of course, sit back, relax, and enjoy, because we're going to have a very interesting broadcast today. I also want to remind all of you that they will send out a rebroadcast of today's show a little later this afternoon. And I ask that you kindly send that off to family and friends, because we are really rocking and rolling about getting things moving in America again. And you know our theme for 2019 is working together for the best interests of America and American workers. I want to thank our panel members, our very faithful panel members who help us to make our broadcast a success each week. And they include Dr. Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store. I want to tell you, Mark, I get a lot of people tell me they absolutely think you are the very best. Thank you for your participation. Larkin Connolly, National Small Business Advocate, and a man who has a lot of good to say, and he is definitely pro-American made. Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology, a man who could recite things from memory. It's almost unbelievable, and people love you, Rich, as well. And also Curtis Ellis, a man of great knowledge, who really knows how to say it and do it and present it, and he is promoting the American First Project and always there to help advise President Trump and be part of our broadcast as well. I also want to say thank you to our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. This is really a lot of work to get all the stuff out to the people. We do a pre-note that goes out to thousands and thousands of people. Then we send out the broadcast. All that is done by our very capable engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash, always very happy to be with you. Well, last week I closed off the broadcast by stating that I would like to discuss our border wall situation and how it's hurting our American workers, how it's hurting America, and why we think it should be resolved. As I look at the emergency declaration that was declared by President Trump last Friday, he's really fulfilling his constitutional pledge to defend and protect the borders and the well-being of the American people. I think he's doing that, and that's why I'm very pleased to have all these discussions going, because he made that pledge when he was inaugurated as President of the United States. And here we are, now everybody is protesting. I don't understand it. Why weren't they protesting for many years? I personally feel, and we're going to have a little clip from President Clinton and also from Senator Schumer today. And I feel that the wall, the barrier, the fence, whatever you want to call it, is one addition to a way to secure America's southern border and let people know that they just don't walk into America at their will. They have to follow our rules and regulations. You know, I'd like to ask Henry if he'd be kind enough to put on the President Clinton. President Clinton, let us know your thoughts on the wall and immigration.
All Americans, not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country, are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more, by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. In the budget I will present to you, we will try to do more to speed the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace, as recommended by the commission headed by former Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
There's also one more presentation I'd like to turn to, and that is Senator Schumer.
Legal immigration and anti-illegal immigration. Illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration, which the American people overwhelmingly oppose. If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong, and we have to change it. Above all else, the American people want their government to be serious about protecting the public, enforcing the rule of law, and creating a rational system of legal immigration that will proactively fit our needs rather than reactively responding to future waves of illegal immigration. People who enter the United States without our permission are illegal aliens, and illegal aliens should not be treated the same as people who entered the U.S. legally. The American people will never accept immigration reform unless they truly believe that their government is committed to ending future illegal immigration. And any successful comprehensive immigration reform bill must recognize this fact. Any immigration solution must recognize that we must do as much as we can to gain control of our borders as soon as possible. But we also need to set the record straight. The American people need to know that because of our efforts in Congress, our border is far more secure today than it was when we began debating comprehensive reform in 2005. Between 2005 and 2009, a vast amount of progress has been made on our borders and ports of entry. The progress includes 9,000 new Border Patrol field agents in the last 4 years, construction of a 630-mile border fence, or 630 miles of border fence, that create a significant barrier to illegal immigration on our southern land border.
Well, I think that you heard more than enough of Senator Schumer. That was back in 2009. We've been talking about this. There's been money put in the budgets for years, and nothing's been accomplished. And that's really been a very negative thing for American workers. In fact, all of these people that are coming to the United States of America right now, if they were coming before all the jobs left America, maybe we would not have this problem. We'd be welcoming people because we'd have the jobs to fill, just as we did 120 years ago during the Industrial Revolution. That is not how it is. We are struggling right now to get our jobs back, bring our industries back to America's shores. And with that, I want to open up the conversation. Today, I'm going to start with Rich Loges. What did you think of the clips that we played?
Hey, Michael. Good morning to everybody and to our listeners and Curtis. And great idea, Michael, with the clips. Adds flavor to the show and holds those who stated those words to account. And, Michael, forgive me, guys, for repeating this point, but I really think it answers the question, you know, what changed? What changed between, so that was President Clinton probably circa 94, I'm guessing, 94, 95?
95.
And then 95, okay, so he was legislatively, he had to work with the, you know, the monumental shocking win of the Republican Party in Congress, where the separation of powers actually kind of worked then. It didn't work perfectly. Nothing ever does. But Speaker Gingrich and Clinton had to look each other eye to eye and keep the government running. And we got four balanced budgets. So you can't balance budgets and you give everything away, right? So credit to President Clinton then. And then Chuck Schumer, that's probably circa, I don't know, 06, 08?
09.
Okay, so right around then. So 10 years later, what's happened? Well, here's what's happened, Michael. And again, I don't think this answer is that hard to come to. Politics is sales. To stay in office, politicians have to give their market what they want. If a business does not provide their market what they want, that business goes out of business. So the politicians, and this is true of any ideology, the Democrat politicians see that their voting base has become less and less concerned about illegal border crossings, about illegal aliens, about any crime or draining of resources due to those who are not here legally. So that's why the shift, Michael, in the rhetoric. So we went from, we're a nation of immigrants, but we're also a nation of laws. We're not a nation of men, we're a nation of laws. Chuck, and then we flip it all the way to this side to now say that borders and sovereignty are archaic and outdated. No politician, Michael, has an original thought, including, by the way, President Trump, because President Trump got elected because he went out and campaigned on the issues that he reasonably suspected and proved to be correct that his voting base wanted. President Trump, or candidate Trump, did not wonder, did not worry about what people who would vote for Jeffrey Dahmer if he ran as a Democrat thought. So that's what's changed. It's not about the politicians, Michael. It is about the voting bases. That right there, you want to answer the question of why the divide, because you've got a segment of the voting population that has no regard any longer, or has very little regard for our borders and our sovereignty and our law enforcement, whose job description it is to risk their lives to protect Americans at the border. So you've got that group. And not to generalize, but then you've kind of got everybody else, right, where we may have difference of opinions on certain policies, but we kind of feel like, no, borders work. You know, like, you should enforce the border policies. You should enforce the laws. You shouldn't allow anyone to just walk right in. And if anyone needs any last point, if anyone needs any more evidence of it, I mean, just wait until the Democratic primaries start picking up. In 4 months, we're going to have our first debate. And to quote Ted Cruz back in 2016, it's really going to look like the Bolsheviks versus the Mensheviks. And all you're going to see on that stage, Curtis, are a bunch of Democrats jockeying to see whom more likely Vladimir Lenin would vote for than not. That's all you're going to see. It's who can out-Marxize the other side. That's all the primaries are going to be about. So get ready, guys. Because if you think the open border discussion and rhetoric is hot now, just wait, Michael. Just wait.
Yes, and I agree 100%. The thing is that this has been going on for so many years. I mean, Clinton built a lot of the fence. President Bush finalized some of the fence. President Obama wanted the fence. It's just everybody wanted this to end. We had to put up some notice to people. We put fences up around our houses, around our schools. I mean, why has this been a issue that the politicians have been foot dragging on for so many years? Before I go to Curtis and Larkin and Mark, I want to just add this. American workers are really being hurt by all this illegal immigration. And we, the taxpayers, are also being hurt, mainly because our expenses, we pay for our own by working and saving. These people come, and the illegal aliens are taking up health care, school, police, welfare, the whole gig. And it's on our tab, not their tab, but our tab. Curtis, what are your thoughts on the matter?
Well, it's wonderful to be here and to be discussing what is probably the most important issue facing our country. Because as you've alluded to, and as President Trump has said, if you don't have a border, you don't have a country. That's just self-obvious. Look, the problem is not just illegal immigration. The problem also includes the high levels of legal immigration. We are currently opening our borders and opening our doors and windows and entryways into this country to a flood of legal immigration as well as illegal. And many of these people are being admitted simply because they are related to someone who's already here. There is no merit-based system. There is no criteria other than I'm Auntie Mabel related to so-and-so who already lives here. We're currently giving out about 1 million green cards a year. And once you have a green card, you're virtually assured you will become a citizen. In addition, we're giving out hundreds of thousands of work visas through the H-1B program, H-2B program, L-1 visas, and spouses of the holders of these visas, and students also get a special work permit, overseas students that come here. So we're basically flooding the labor market. And by doing that, we're undercutting the wages of Americans and of citizens. It's been said that the reason we had high wages in this country, and I unfortunately have to use the past tense on that, and historically we had higher wages here, is because we didn't have a large native indigenous population that could be exploited and used as slave labor. You go around the world and you look at countries where there were huge indigenous populations and wages remained low, people remained poor, and there was a small ruling elite that was very wealthy. That was the case in Mexico. The Aztecs didn't cut out the hearts and sacrifice every single Indian, so there was a law on top of a pyramid before the Spanish showed up. So there was still a huge pool of labor of the Indians, the natives of that country, where there were lots of them. And so when the Spanish came and they set up a system where they could use that labor to work the land, and the Spanish remained on top and got very wealthy, and everybody else stayed poor. Brazil, same situation there. They brought slaves over from Africa. So, and of course, down south here in America, we did the same thing. But in the rest of the country, there wasn't, they didn't bring in slaves, and they had to pay the people, the few people that were here were able to earn decent wages doing the work. Well, now we're bringing in all kinds of people from all over the place. And the ones we're not bringing in are coming in on their own, illegally. And this has the effect of undercutting the wages of the people who live here and were born here and are here legally. And look, the H-1B visa program is perfectly legal, but it's perfectly abused. It's supposed to be to bring in people who have skills that Americans don't have, but that's not how it's being used. Being used to bring in tech workers, for the most part, this is how it's being used, to bring in tech workers from India, who the Americans then train, and then these Indian temporary workers end up replacing the Americans. The Americans are fired, and they're replaced with this low-wage, basically low-skill labor from India. And then eventually the Indians go back to India, and they move the entire IT department of whatever company they were working for, then that becomes offshored and moves to India with them. So, look, we have a problem with illegal immigration. We have to control the border, and we have a problem with legal immigration. It's being used to bring in vast amounts of cheap labor. And this is because the donors to both parties, the big money donors to both the Democrat and the establishment Republican Party, want cheap labor. And they pay big bucks to the politicians to keep them bought. And what we saw in this latest spending bill that the president signed, it was negotiated by congressional negotiators, Republicans and Democrats, both of whom, on both sides of the aisle, are beholden to the big business, cheap labor, import lobby. And there are provisions in there that are just radically horrible, that prevent the president from deporting people who deserve to be deported. Luckily, the whole thing expires in 6 months, but the president's declaration of a national emergency is right in line with statutes that Congress approved, and as you said very eloquently, it's right in line with the oath of office that he swore to protect and defend the United States of America. If we can't protect our own borders, what the hell can a commander-in-chief do?
That's right. And, you know, if we can't protect our own people, in the last few days I've been watching these organized protesters going out, and I'm saying to myself, why didn't these people organize protests to protect America and ensure that America's laws were being not broken every minute of the day, but obeyed? Why didn't they do that? Why did it take President Clinton and Bush and Obama, and now it's on the hands of President Trump? Why did it take 25 years to get just 700 miles of the barrier up? We want the rest of the barrier. The barrier tells you that you don't violate. You just don't come in like some barnyard animal from outer space, just walking through the door. You have to come in welcomed. You know, I want to mention this once again. 100-some years ago, during the peak of the early days of the Industrial Revolution, we had a port of entry here in the city of Philadelphia on Delaware Avenue and Washington Avenue. Companies were bringing the people over on the steamship liners, and those people were expected. They were already known that they were coming in and who the sponsoring group was. In other words, the coal miners would send down transportation to bring back the adults. Yes, the adults had families. But they needed full adults, not children that could be, you know, come up the ranks, but they needed workers right now. All these industries that were in America were bringing these people over. That's not how this is. The Statue of Liberty is there. Ellis Island is there to welcome. We had immigrant port of entry in Boston, in Baltimore, in Philadelphia, and Ellis Island. And they all, most of the people, were expected by someone. They just didn't get off the boat and all of a sudden start roaming around. Some people were sponsored. Other people were expected because you were going in this industry. You were going in the steel industry. You were going to help make the cars, the railroad car, the Bud Company. All these companies were bringing people over because they needed adult labor. We don't need adult labor now. We have enough adults in this country that need a job. Dart Larkin Connolly, what would you like to add to this conversation?
Well, Michael, good morning. And good morning to my fellow panelists and to the listeners. I think everyone knows pretty much how I feel about polls and where I think polls stand in their relevance to news today. But if there is one pollster out there that gets it right more often than others, it's the oldest one, which would be Gallup. So excuse me while I quote a Gallup poll. In a recent one, 35% said that government is the worst problem facing the U.S., in 55 years that Gallup poll has been asking this question, what do you think the most important problem facing the country is today? This is the highest, almost by twice, percentage of people who have identified the government as the nation's worst problem. And that's why you can't solve any problems. You can't have a dysfunctional organization resolving issues. I'm going to steal something from Rich that he said months ago. If the prospect of a wall, creating stabilizing our border to the south, was a genuinely terrible idea that wouldn't work. I promise you, with every amount of promise that I could muster up, that the Democrats would be for it. They would want Trump to go out there and build the wall and spend the money and then point out at the next election that none of the numbers have come down, the wall didn't work, it was a complete failure. That's another element of why this wall is happening. It's amazing how many Americans see the government as a really, really large problem. And you have to wonder why Democratic politicians' ambitions are to give government more power over our lives. I mean, it kind of doesn't make any sense. And particularly in the area of health care. Boy, if you don't like any of the other services the government has managed to provide for us, you know, let's put them in charge of health care. It'll look like the post office in less than a month. So, you know, the government's the problem, and until we fix that,
you know, Larkin, you're right.
Until we realize that the Democrats surge to the left. And they have surged to the left like I never thought they could do. It makes it that much more impossible to govern.
You know, Larkin, as I looked at that clip with President Clinton speaking at the address in 1995, I looked at some of the people in the seats. They are the same people that are in the Congress today. Yes, we have several new people, maybe 100 new people, but we also have a lot of people who've been there way too long and simply don't understand that this cannot continue. The fact that those people who were sitting there in that address, the State of the Union address in 95, clapped for all of those things is wonderful. They also watched, said nothing, and did nothing as industries walked out of this country for greener pastures, leaving our people without jobs and security. Mark, what do you have to add?
Yeah, how you doing, guys? And Mike Larkin, Rich, Curtis, thanks for always joining us. And Henry, thanks for making us sound good. Great. I love that you opened the show with them clips showing different points in time and where it was still the same problem that needed to be taken care of. And every side believed in it, Mike. Just a lot going on. Again, that's something that, you know, President Trump, hats off to, is staying on and is going to close that deal, but it should be quicker so we can move on to better and better things. Mike, I'm with you. Them protesters could be doing much better the other way, you know, for protection and for keeping our, you know, country safe. I'm totally against the drugs coming in, and there's so much to it as they fine tune and detail and break this down how much it's needed. I'm hoping it is steel, and I can build a lot of it, Mike.
You know what, Mark? I want to ask you a question. How do you think those protesters are paid to be there? Who gets them there? What's their transportation? How about little nourishment, some refreshments? How does all that get paid?
Everything. You follow that money trail, it'll show up, Mike. You know, and I want to say, Mike, I just came out of a great meeting with Honor Flight. It's a little off our discussion. But Honor Flight, again, raises, you know, money to get our heroes to Washington. And Tom Petrie out of Western New York here runs this hub. But a lot of people don't realize there's 130 hubs in the United States with Honor Flight, you know, originally founded to get our World War II veterans to Washington to see their memorials, but now the Korean and Vietnam. But it was neat. It was on a national level. Meredith is the CEO now, and it cost $57,000 just to get the tickets to get one plane load to go to Washington. And our goal, you know, through Tom Petrie, is to get two planes to Washington out of Buffalo. They got one for May and October planned to get our heroes there. But I just wanted to give a hats off to our listeners and even our group here to look into Honor Flight and how much and how important it is to help our veterans before you know, they move on to get to that memorial that they so deserved. And I, again, last spring was on a flight, and it's just honorable and emotional. And hats off to Honor Flight. We're a big supporter. Mike, you may even want to put something on your website to help Honor Flight raise the money to get these heroes to Washington. So thanks, Mike. I just want to
please do. I mean, Mark, send that so that we can post that on our site. You mentioned something very interesting. You were talking about the cost of flights. As you look at some of these protests, they have the same organizers in city to city. Now, either these people are paid to do it. How are they getting there? How are they organizing the people? I know that with the new media that we have, you can organize people within a day and get thousands of people out. But it costs money. In fact, these caravans coming up to Mexico, how are they being fed? How are they being taken care of? Who's taking care of their health care on the way up? And where do they go to the bathroom? I mean, let's ask all the questions. There's something fishy about this whole thing.
You're
the,
right.
The bottom line is the United States taxpayer. That's all of us sitting in this studio. That's all of you listening on the radio and all of our panel members. We simply cannot sustain the growing number of people becoming part of government programs. Free health care, schools, police, crime facilities, homeland securities, just to name a few. The list is endless. It's that these people want this to be an industry in itself, a business that keeps them employed. No, they don't want the wall. They want everybody walking in because that means their job is secure.
It's all about the voting bases. This week, I am publishing an article about the Democrats' fierce opposition to including a citizenship question on the census. Now, Curtis, in national elections, state elections, although in some municipalities, those who are not, they may be legal, they're green card holders, right? So they're legal, but they're not citizens, or they're illegal aliens. There are some municipalities around the country that are now allowing illegals and non-citizens to vote in school board and local elections. So illegal aliens and non-citizen legal people, Michael, who are here in the U.S., cannot vote in state national elections, especially national. So the question is, why are the Democrats so opposed to a citizenship question on the census? And I'm going to tell you why they are, and I go into this in detail. It's all about the bodies, Michael.
Yes, Rich,
because when you add, first of all, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I have talked on my show. I hate the fact, actually, that many on our side delve into conspiracy theories because it weakens our side. There are not 11 million illegal aliens in this country.
Triple
there
it.
There are probably double to triple.
Triple it.
And even if you count a quarter of those people on top of the normal population increase, all the citizenship question is about is increasing the number of electoral votes in the hopeless Democrat states and in the states where I and Larkin are and where you and Henry are, the swing states. It's all about the long game, Michael. The Dems know that the majority of people in the majority of states don't want their political product. These people are not stupid. The new class of Democrats coming in, they're kind of dumb. But the old guard, the old school Dems, Michael, they're not stupid. They understand what has happened, the dynamics that have changed in their voting base. And now I just have to say one other thing, and I'm saying this to tease here, but our audio engineer, Henry, does a great job. I mean, a great, great job. But now that Bernard Sanders is in, I hope we're not going to lose Henry as a vote in a swing state vote here. Because you guys in Pennsylvania, Michael, you know, you're...
Say what
you want
about Bernie, but at least I know he's not lying to me.
You guys are a blue-leaning purple state, so I hope we don't lose Henry. I hope we don't lose that crucial swing vote with Bernard Sanders being in the race now. Because it's still right. We still got to go through the primary and all of that and go through all the loser narratives. But I've never told anyone how to vote. I never would ever do that. It's a disrespect to the individual and the electoral process. But I just hope we don't lose that. I hope we don't lose a crucial swing vote here.
Now, I want to just mention one more thing. Go ahead, Larkin.
Did I just hear Henry intimate to me that he found a politician that doesn't lie?
Well, Larkin, in all the time he ran, did they find anything on Bernie ever? Ever. The guy's like 170 years old. Nobody's got any kind of dirt on him.
Well, what do you mean no dirt on him? You know what you need to do? You need to get off of here. You need to, when we're done today, you need to go and search his wife. Go find his wife.
His wife's not running. I don't care. She lies.
Oh, you don't? Okay. All righty. Yeah. So, listen, you know, I wanted to add something, too. I also wanted to add something to what Rich said. I'm not all that upset that Andrea, AOC, Andrea, whatever her name is, was elected. You know, I think she's, in her own inimitable way, creating a dialogue that we need to have. This country needs to think about this and talk about it. And all of it gets shaken out when we have new and fresh blood come in that challenges this country and what it is right now and where it is and how we fix our problems. Unfortunately, they're leaning towards socialism. But I'm going to tell you, health care can be fixed by three people, and they're working on it now. And when they come out with their answer, it's going to absolutely blow the Dems out of the water. So when Jeff Bezos and Jamie Dimon and Warren Buffett get done with their little initiative, it's going to leave the Democrats stuttering, absolutely stuttering with what they think needs to happen to a quote-unquote universal health care. That's the only way we can fix it, is to make it universal health care. Everything that's been said today about politicians trying to win votes and influence people, especially Rich, you are so on target about the Dems wanting cheap labor and votes. And that's all they're driving for. They have no other answer to the problems, none whatsoever. So they're going to go out and muster those illegal votes.
Look, I mean, the Dems want cheap votes. The Republican establishment wants donor class wants cheap labor. So that's the unholy alliance here. You have the Wall Street financiers who finance the giant corporations who donate to the politicians. They want cheap labor. The Democrats want cheap votes, unlimited votes. So they both get together and found the solution. It's called open borders, both legal and illegal immigration at unsustainable levels. And that is the picture in a nutshell. And Donald Trump is an existential threat to them when he says we must limit immigration, we must enforce our borders and control the numbers of people that come across. This is a dire existential threat to the huge money interests that control both parties. And that's why you saw the Republican negotiators in this last go-round roll over and basically give the Democrats everything they wanted, because they were also giving their donors everything they wanted, which is access to cheap labor. There's another thing going on here, too, which is in the marrow of their bone, the establishment forces in this country do not believe in the existence of sovereign nations anymore. They believe in the global economy.
Right.
I have a piece coming out very shortly on American Greatness website, amgreatness.com, which has the testimony of Undersecretary of State George Ball from 1967, where he lays out the case that multinational companies must be free to operate as they will without any restrictions placed on them by national governments or individual nation states, which he refers to as an antiquated political structure. The nation state is an antiquated political structure in their view.
Interesting. And, very interesting.
And Michael, can I just back Curtis up on something here?
Sure.
Last week, the United States Chamber of Commerce officially declared its opposition to what the president wants to do with the declaration of a national emergency. Now, why did the United States Chamber of Commerce do that? It's really in principle, it's a different outcome, but it's really the same principle behind why we want to count people in the census. It's why we want to flood the country with more bodies, because illegal immigration, probably more than any other issue that I can think of. I mean, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, and I've said this before, Michael. I don't think there's any other issue, illegal immigration, that more binds the Uniparty. Honestly, there is no issue that more so, maybe we could argue it equally, but no issue that more so binds the two-party industrial complex, the two sides of the same coin. And I really think this issue is a big reason why there is a wedge driven in the establishment Republican Party, because if you look on that stage, if you look in the last two presidential elections, and you look at people like Willard, right? Did you guys see Willard at that State of the Union? I mean, that guy, you talk about a sourpuss, and I'm sure he's standing there thinking, that should have been me, right? He's standing there. I mean, you talk about a sourpuss. You look at a Willard. You look at a Hep Bush. You look at a Kasich, a Rubio, any of them. Maybe not so much Cruz, but Cruz never had a shot, period, to win the nomination. All of them differed greatly on this issue in terms of the candidate Trump who ran. So this issue binds the two parties more than any other. And as a serious question, you're talking about protesters, Michael, just another point. And I have asked this question seriously of people, and I will ask it for all of us here. Do you guys know anybody, one person, do you know anyone whose mind was changed by watching a bunch of men and women wearing hats shaped like vaginal labia? Well, do you guys know a single person who said, wow,
their minds
that
about
protester
what?
Wearing a hat shaped like vaginal labia is so persuasive, I think I'm going to change my mind. Is there any, can you name any one person?
Change my mind about what there, Rich?
Tim, I just want to let Tim at the studio know.
Oh, about politics?
I looked at the FEC standards. That word doesn't have to be muted out. I already went ahead and preemptively checked it for you, Tim, so don't worry about it.
But, you know, guys, I want to tell you, I'm glad we're discussing this because this really is for the benefit of American workers. And, you know, guys, I know that there are many Democrats and Republicans. I meet with people in my travels. I meet somebody all the time that tells me they enjoy this kind of back and forth during the broadcast. But they also feel, and I join 100% with their thinking, that both Democrats and Republicans were both derelict in protecting America's southern borders, which means they haven't acted properly to protect America, Americans, and American workers. This went on for so many years. It's since the time when Reagan was in. They were already saying we have to do something about it. Then in 95, Clinton. Then, of course, 9/11 took a lot of attention away from what was happening. But border security was a little more stringent at that time after 9/11. Then after that, it became lax again. President Obama complained about it. And now it's on the doorstep, as I said earlier, of President Trump. And something has to be done. Quite frankly, illegal immigrants have hurt American workers very, very deeply. It's caused wages to really stay flat, and I mean flat in many cases, and it has to be addressed. I mean, something has to be done. Everything cannot be done with the almighty vote in mind. I think the taxpayers really have to start speaking up, start calling their local, their state, and their federal politicians. There's no reason to fear. These people are paid to do a job for you and me. They're paid to do a job. Call them up and let them know so they can never say, oh, I've never been contacted by anybody. That would be a lie. Send an email. Why should they not receive an email with your name on it, knowing that you have an opinion? Don't be afraid to speak up. This is a whole new world. This particular time, we have a divided government in Washington, which is good. I like to see people on both sides of the aisle. I think there should have been a third party for years, as I've been saying. I'd like to see people seated at the table, at least three people, maybe even four, that have some majority, that be able to speak up and say the two system. Right now, if one person leaves the table, that means there's only one party in the room. If you have three parties or four parties, you have the other parties. You at least have two parties able to speak. This has got to be looked into. The barriers are certainly an alert to people that America is no longer a free-for-all, that the American taxpayers are not taking this. They are reacting. One last point before I go to Mark is this. I think that too many people in government, as we spoke a few weeks ago, how many government employees we have. It's over 20,000 American people employed. A lot of them are employed taking care of people who are illegally here in this country. No matter what, people, if a person is here, the American government will not let them starve or be hurt or their kids go uneducated. So this is something we have to consider. We want people in our country, and we do want people in our country. We have to make the rules and regulations that were put in place be obeyed. Yes, Mark, you were going to say.
Yeah, no, I just want to change gears a little bit here. Just with the skilled trades push is very, very alive. Mike, just want to bring it up to speed and date. Next week I do a huge speaker spot with Dream It, Do It, who's using the American-made movie across the country to make raise awareness at the schools. And it's through, Dream It, Do It next week down in the Olean area. And, Curtis, you probably know where that is, Larkin. But 500, 600 people attending. The skilled trades push is really doing well, Mike. It's coming around. I'm seeing reactions from the schools and getting more internships and more business-to-school relationships. It's really in the last weeks I've seen a ton of movement. You're talking illegal immigrants and whatnot, but what about our students that we have now that need a job and need a career? And I really just want to say the movement's alive and well and really moving forward. To have 500, 600, 700 students and teachers and staff sign up for next week at a movie showing, the American-made movie and a speech just on skilled trades and how important making things in your own country is. And I think we've got a president and an administration, and thank you, Curtis, for all you do, that's really moving things in the right direction. The wall is one decision that has to be done, but he's answered so many things. And I just want to tell the listeners how busy I am. And, thanks to this administration, I really don't think we'd exist as General Welding and Fabricating.
You know, I want to add just one thing, and then I'm going to go back to Curtis. You know, in the state of Pennsylvania, we have a Democratic governor, and I want to compliment Governor Tom Wolf at this time, because he is pushing all of the trade programs in the schools. He's been asking the questions for a few years now, questions that should have been asked by many prior
30, 40
governors.
Years ago.
Many prior governors. This governor is now saying, we have to end this. We have to bring more people into the schools. Let's talk turkey. Let's not just not listen to people on radio shows complaining and attacking us. Let's join them and get people into the classrooms that are going to be the skilled workers that the industries need to stay here. And that will help us not to have to depend on all these visas coming from all over the world. Yes, Dr. Curtis.
Yeah, skilled trade is really a huge part of the equation here. We're seeing more job openings than we have people to fill them. And why aren't we training people for the jobs we need? That's a question that President Trump and his administration is addressing. The Labor Department is rejiggering its training programs. We spend billions of dollars on job training programs, and most of them have been frozen in amber since 1970. They're still training people for, you know, I don't know what. There's no feedback loop from people like Mark and the other employers as to what should we be training people for. There's a huge prejudice against skilled trades in the establishment. There's this belief that everybody's got to go to college and become, I don't know what, a quantum physicist or a lawyer. And not everybody's cut out for that. Not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody should do that. And I think part of the deal is that the banks are making huge money extending loans to people for useless college education. They don't care that people get out, and all they're prepared for is a graduate seminar in victimhood. They don't care about that because they now have these people on the hook. These graduates are now on the hook for $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 in debt. They're in debt peonage for the rest of their lives. And again, you have a compliant population. If they're so busy working to pay back debt, they're not thinking about other things. They're stressed out. Their cortical hormones are raging, and it's a mess. It's a compliant population who's paying off debt, not working. But back to the skilled trades, it's so important. And again, why are we bringing in unlimited numbers of people who don't have the skills that we need to support our economy when our own people are not being educated? You know, at the same time, our own people are not being educated and given those skills. And at the same time, we're seeing through automation and technological advancement, there are a lot of jobs that are disappearing. As you started out the show saying, Michael, when we brought in the huge waves of immigration in the 1890s, we had a country to settle. We no longer have a country to settle. The country is settled. It's filled up. We had jobs that needed to be filled. There are now jobs disappearing. There is no excuse and no justification, no rationale.
No justification. Right.
None whatsoever. Hey, by the way, somebody once said, I read somewhere, when they say it's a nation of immigrants, well, let's be honest. Let's not sugarcoat our own history here, folks. We are a nation of settlers and conquerors. I mean, it's not pretty, but it's true. It may not be pretty, but it's true. They were immigrants, yes, but they were also settlers. We had a country to settle, and we're also conquerors. We took half this country from Spain. First, we took it, the British took it, everything east of the Mississippi from the French. Then we bought a big chunk of it from the French. And then we took a lot of it from Mexico. And I'm not saying that's bad. Those are just the facts. And if you don't like it, too bad. That's what happened. And you can't re-litigate it just by going, wow, 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 I don't like that. So we're not just it's not as simple as, oh, we're a nation of immigrants and everything's wonderful and we should welcome immigrants. No, it's a little more complicated than that, and I make no apologies for it. That's just the way it is.
And I think, Curtis, I'd like to see all the governors get together in the room with President Trump more than just once a year. It should be a monthly get-together to talk about what's needed in the states. Something has to be done. I don't think the governors are called upon enough to speak. I'd like to make a shout-out today for Alliance Speed Queen Laundry Equipment. They've been made in America from day one. An MCH equipment company certainly does its best to promote the Speed Queen program. And I'd like to see more of our companies come forward in the future. And let's try to highlight them to see how we can make sure that people go out of their way to look for their products where they shop.
Michael, I'd also like to throw a shout out to Mike Sessions from Gofore Made in USA. They are doing a lot of updates on the site. You should definitely go check it out on your mobile app, Gofore Made in USA.
And you can also link from it from the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Just click on the link and you'll go right to it. Thank you, Mike Sessions, for your endless cooperation. I want to say a special thank you to Larkin Connolly, Rich Logis, Mark Andel, Curtis Ellis, and our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. As you can see by the clock on the wall, it's time for us to end our broadcast for today. We will have a rebroadcast up. Send it out to family members and friends, because we're talking about positive things. And in the process, if you see something negative, just turn it off. You'll do without it. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, my best wishes to you and yours. May God bless you and God bless America.
Have a great week, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a great week.